Okay, hi you guys. Welcome back to the Huddle Up podcast for KCR Radio at San Diego State. I am back again with Nicole Beckelman and Jake Burton. My name is Megan Townsley, and we are ready to dive into all of the madness that has been happening in sports lately. So I say let's just jump right into the hottest topic right now, which is the Green Bay Packers and Aaron Rodgers, his extreme frustration. So I swear every single time I turn on the TV or open my phone, that is the number one headline. And as a Green Bay Packers fan, I, of course, have been stressing out. So what do you guys think is going on right now in Aaron Rodgers' brain?
Well, it seems like Aaron Rodgers wants a divorce, and he's already making the fans choose sides, and they're not even separated yet. So that's kind of toxic. I mean, if we're really thinking about it like that. And I think it's kind of getting to the point of actually the point of no return. So it's going to be interesting to see what the Packers ultimately decide. To no surprise, Aaron is being difficult once again, but he might have actually drawn a line in the sand, and I think the Packers might just be doing the same. So are they shopping him? We don't know, because they kind of live and die with Aaron Rodgers, as we know. But his list of teams, he gave his list of teams, and that is the San Francisco 49ers, who already made their decision, so they're going to be out of the running for him. And then you also have the Denver Broncos and the Las Vegas Raiders. That would make the AFC West really stacked if he went to the Denver Broncos. I'm guessing if he went to the Raiders, it would just be kind of a switcheroo. Okay, you take Derek Carr and a package of some assortment of picks and players, whatever that is, and we get Aaron Rodgers. So, but yeah, I don't really know what's going to happen there. It's heating up for sure. I don't necessarily agree with the way Aaron Rodgers is going about this. I can't say he's fully justified in doing what he's done.
I think the Packers have done a great job of pissing off Aaron Rodgers. However, I think that helps him be a better player. I mean, we saw after this last season, we all know he was upset how they drafted Love and didn't give him any weapons on his offense. But he was the MVP. Like, he did amazing. I think Aaron Rodgers is not really worried about how the media perceives him or how fans perceive him. He's just doing what he thinks is best for himself. And I think that comes off as him being looking like kind of a jerk in a sense. But yeah, I think he definitely wants out of Green Bay. And I think he knows, or I don't even know if that's the best option for him, but I think he's a little fed up with the organization and he wants something new. I wonder if maybe he was a little like inspired by Brady, you know, leaving after all these years with the Patriots and all these, you know, veteran quarterbacks are switching around. So
oh, this has everything to do with Tom. This has everything to do with Brady. Just, yeah, well, I want to make that clear.
He left and then he went and goes and wins another Super Bowl.
He wants the Brady treatment, but he doesn't have the resume. So it's a little harder to justify.
I mean, no one has the resume Brady has, but if there's someone who's up there, it is Rodgers.
But do you think there's a team that Rodgers could go to and then in the next season win the Super Bowl like Brady did? Because I don't think there is.
Brady got lucky.
And he also didn't follow him too.
If we're going just off his teams that he quote unquote preferred, I would have said easily, yeah, the San Francisco 49ers. But it doesn't look like that's going to happen. And I also would have said, I might say the Denver Broncos, but that is a super tough division. I don't know if they necessarily have all the pieces yet to win a Super Bowl. I mean, you're going to have Von Miller and Bradley Chubb coming back. So that's pretty big for defense. And, but they do have some holes on defense. So I don't love their roster where it's at right now. And then, the Raiders. Yeah. The Raiders are going to be too young. They're not quite there yet. They're still deep in the rebuilding process, even though they have Derek Carr. So, yeah, I don't know. It'd be tough to find a legitimate, a good fit and a team that wants to send an absolute haul to deal with somebody as difficult as he is, because it seems like you can't win with him. It seems like I initially thought it was completely about the money. They didn't want to give him the contract extension, the mega deal that he wanted, you know, the average annual value on his contract that he's seeking. So then he just immediately went out. He's like, okay, you know what? You crossed me on draft day last year, so I'm going to do the same this year and ruin it for you guys. And that's exactly what he did with the absolute bombshell of a headliner on draft day. And some people think he's a terrible person for that. I'm somewhere in the middle. I think it's somewhat justified, but he also could have absolutely gone about this much better. I mean, it's like, yeah, the Packers have made mistakes, I think, in ways trying to build around him for the last, you know, 5 or so years. But do you really want to put somebody, especially, you know, one specific person on full blast you know, for making that mistake. And in this case, that was the GM. And he said he wanted him fired on draft day. And I guess that was a legitimate report. And that's not exactly what you want to see from, you know, what's supposed to be the leader and the captain of your franchise. So,
Who's that report from? Because words get twisted, rumors are spread. Like, who is that from?
I believe it was Adam Schefter. I don't know if that was 100%.
I mean, that is legit, but
yes, that is legit.
it was either, I think it was Schefter or Ian Rappaport from NFL Network, but I'd have to double check that. I don't know. I saw an Instagram post somewhere. I think it was legit, but okay, I mean,
what Instagram?
I don't remember. You're gonna have to give me a second to
Nicole
find
Nicole's fact checking me right now.
I am, because that's a very bold statement, and I feel like that could create a lot of animosity between inside the organization, which is not good. And I mean, Rodgers just had a great season, and Rodgers just had a great last season. I don't know. I just feel like that can't be true.
I really feel like Rodgers was just playing with the media. Yeah. Well, what I think is really crazy is you have, like, Green Bay has MVP, legendary quarterback, and they're just not supporting him. And I found this stat, and Green Bay has not drafted a first round offensive player since 2002. They only drafted one, and that was Jordan Love. So they're not giving him any help. So I remember when we were texting the group chat, Green Bay, their first round pick, didn't go, and they went to a defensive player. And it's just so frustrating, especially as a Green Bay fan, because all you have to do is just maybe get him one more weapon, one more wide receiver that could help them this next season. And Green Bay didn't do that. So I honestly think Green Bay just fumbled the bag on this one. And I've seen a lot of people, like a lot of analysts, talking about, like, how do you get Aaron back? Do you just beg him? Do you let him go? What do you do in this situation? And I really think, because what, he's 37 right now. He's maybe got 3-4 more seasons in him. Maybe his fourth season after this won't be like at the same caliber, but still, you could extend his contract. So I heard some people talking about, you just got to pay more than Mahomes, which you're talking like 35, 36 million a year. But then again, Jake just brought up, is it the money, or is it he really doesn't want to play there? So at this point, he's conflicted. I've read a lot of reports on that. His past teammates, even Brett Favre, made a comment about it, saying that he thinks Rodgers isn't going to budge. So right now, it's just like everything's up in the air. We're just going to wait to see what he wants to do.
Yeah, because I think he has majority of the leverage, because he could just retire from football, go to hosting Jeopardy, make his money there. And that is way easier money than it is dealing with the Packers and all of, you know, that turmoil and not being able to communicate properly in a healthy relationship. So he could easily just go to Jeopardy and say sayonara. But yeah, so it feels like he's playing hard to get. That's kind of what I'm making of it. And I think it could be fixed with a new contract extension that would pay him upwards of, or close to, Mahomes money.
Megan, you were saying it's hard to be a Packers fan and watch this. As a Seahawks fan, I feel your pain. Russell Wilson has been trying to find some, like, begging for a good offensive line. The Seahawks, first of all, don't have a first or second round pick. Or maybe they had a second round. No, I don't think they had a first or second round pick. They're like, first pick was some wide receiver. Second pick was someone else. Or their fourth pick in the draft, which was like in the sixth round, was an offensive tackle. The 208th pick. I'm like, really? Really? Would you need another wide receiver? No.
I didn't think it was that bad of a draft, honestly. Like, I'd probably give it like a B grade, maybe B plus if I'm being generous, but because they still got Amari Rodgers, a guy I really liked out of Clemson, wide receiver, in the third round. And that could easily be a great number two option next to Davante Adams. But yeah, like, it's just been a lot of questionable moves, I think, that the Packers have been making that Aaron has just not agreed with at all. Specifically, like, not paying Corey Linsley, and then he goes on to make a huge deal, gets a huge deal done with the Chargers, becomes the highest paid center in the NFL. And then they decide to pay the running back instead. One of the things that is kind of frowned upon in today's NFL. So I think Aaron Jones is very replaceable. And they let Jamal Williams, the running back right behind him, who I think was a little bit better of a receiving threat, he's off to Detroit now to play for the division rival Lions. So I'm sure, and Aaron really liked Jamal Williams. So I don't know. I think it's just been building up with all these moves. And now he's finally kind of reaching a turning point where he's kind of done with it.
Exactly. Yeah. So that's been some shocking news going around. Let's switch it over to now, just the NFL draft. And A lot of things that I thought were really cool happening this year was actually, it was the first time that five wide receivers were taken in the first three rounds. There was eight quarterbacks in the first three rounds as well. So extremely offensively heavy. But obviously we were talking about before these top five collegiate quarterbacks going into the draft. So I want to ask you guys first, what was the most shocking pick that you saw in the first round, especially when it comes to the quarterbacks?
I don't think this was necessarily shocking because the Niners obviously traded up to get their third round pick and Trey Lance was in the conversation, but I don't think Trey Lance was worth that third round pick. He played, I think, one game this past season, the COVID season, and not even at an elite level. He didn't even go to like a top like powerhouse school. Maybe Kyle Shanahan can mold him into the player he wants him to be, but I just think he's a little overrated. I haven't seen like the amazing Trey Lance. Like, I feel like he's very overrated. I don't know if he will be what the Niners want. So it'll be interesting to see what the Niners do if they keep Jimmy Garoppolo, if they have Trey Lance develop under Garoppolo, if they put Trey Lance in that starting position right away. But I just don't think that was the smartest move for their franchise.
That's kind of funny you say that because I actually graded that pick as an A+. Because like, if you look at the quarterbacks from the last couple of years, I mean, if you liked Josh Allen coming out, if you like Justin Herbert, then you have to like Trey Lance. And I think what it ultimately came down to with that pick was these pre-draft interviews and going through that process. 49ers decided that, oh, we really like his character. We think he's going to mesh well with this offense and Kyle Shanahan. I think they decided that he would be the best decision, that he'd be the best for them going forward. I thought Justin Fields was actually the better overall scheme fit. And a lot of the time that's what is kind of the separates one prospect from another with the team. So, but I think ultimately Trey Lance's ceiling was much higher than Justin Fields. And I mean, he's just got all the tools that you want in your quarterback. He's built in the perfect quarterback mold. Physically, it's just a matter of developing that talent and getting him his IQ, his mechanics, and his accuracy up to par. So that way it'll elevate the 49ers back to Super Bowl contenders. And that's why I think that Trey Lance was the pick and not Justin Fields.
I mean, one thing that, you know, when quarterbacks out of college go into the NFL, I feel like one way that they're judged is like their stats, whatever. But that all has to do with like the weapons that the organization gives them. And one thing, you know, like Trevor Lawrence, he's going to the Jaguars, which was like the worst team last year. Trevor Lawrence looked, you know, amazing on Clemson, but when he goes into the NFL on a different offense and a different organization, do we think Trevor Lawrence is going to be that, you know, amazing Trevor Lawrence he was at Clemson? That's one thing I wonder about all these quarterbacks. And since it was such an offensive heavy draft, if, you know, these quarterbacks and these offensive players are going to be able to shine in a different organization, you know, especially like players like Mac Jones. You know, he's not in the Alabama offense. He's not in an offense that, you know, dominates the league anymore. He's with the Patriots. You know what I'm saying? Well, he probably won't get the starting position because they have Cam Newton. But little things like these, I'm excited to see if these quarterbacks will, you know, thrive under the pressure and under their new organizations, or if they're going to not fail. But one player I'm really excited to keep an eye on is Trevor Lawrence, because he looked so amazing at Clemson, and I hope the Jaguars can utilize him in a good way, because I think he's a great talented player and has a bright future ahead of him.
I like how you just kind of, you know, you throw some shade at him and you kind of doubt him, and then you come back, oh no, I really like this guy actually. You know, no, I really like Trevor too, of course. I have a couple surprising picks actually in the first round. So first of all, the Philadelphia Eagles, they were originally at the 12th overall pick after trading down with Miami. Then they trade back up, and they somehow get a deal done with their division rival, Dallas Cowboys, and they get their guy, wide receiver Devontae Smith. Look, when you are really bad at the wide receiver position and you are struggling to address it, when in doubt, just go ahead and get yourself an Alabama wide receiver. They did that, and I think they got the safest prospect in this draft class in Devontae Smith. I mean, his game is definitely going to translate to the NFL. Best technician in the draft class of these wide receivers this year, and he's definitely gonna have success reuniting him with Jalen Hurts. I think that was a great move to help support Jalen Hurts, that they get him his security blanket up there for that new Philadelphia Eagle offense under Nick Sirianni. Because the Eagles were very dysfunctional, I think, this offseason, you know, starting with the whole Carson Wentz drama. They didn't support him very well, in my opinion, after the Super Bowl. So I was really surprised they actually did a competent move to help Jalen Hurts, their right, what seems like their franchise quarterback right now, so they can fairly evaluate him this year. And then going down here, I also have, as for a surprising pick, the New York Giants, actually. So they were at number 11, a pick before division rival Eagles and right below the Dallas Cowboys. They decided to trade down. They were able to be swayed by the Chicago Bears, who traded up for Justin Fields. So the New York Giants pass on Justin Fields, and they trade down. But then they get a guy that I really love, one of my favorite players in this draft class, my guy. That is Kadarius Toney, because I don't think there's anybody that really moved like Kadarius Toney in this draft class. I mean, you don't see guys just that elusive that come out of the draft every year. There's a very, very small handful of guys like him. And I think he's got it all. I think he's a complete deep threat. He's, you know, 6'1", 190, sub 4.4 speed, super, super elusive. I mean, guys really struggle to even, nobody has the agility that this guy has. And I think this guy's going to have a lot of success. I thought he was going to have a lot of success wherever he went. And I think the Giants, they seem like a competent organization, great coaching staff, good system in place. It's going to make Jason Garrett's really boring offense way more exciting. And I think also that Daniel Jones is finally going to have that deep threat that he can go to now that every dynamic offense needs. So I thought, and Dave Gettleman, this is not a guy that takes wide receivers in the first round. He is known for taking offensive linemen and corners and sometimes pass rushers as well. He passed on pass rushers, and he also passed on the top offensive tackle available, Christian Darrisaw, who had the size and length that Gettleman likes in his offensive tackles. Instead, goes for Kadarius Toney, but I think that was a great pick. I give that an A+. If you told me you could trade down in the first round and still get Kadarius Toney, that's an A+ automatically for me. So I really like that pick by the Giants. And then the other surprising pick to me, it's the Jacksonville Jaguars. Okay, at number 25, taking the running back out of Clemson, Travis Etienne. To be honest, this is one of my most overrated prospects in the draft class of this year. I just really don't think that his game is going to translate all that well. A lot of people really, I think a lot of fanboys try to make him out to be, you know, Alvin Kamara 2.0. He's not Alvin Kamara 2.0. Just because he looks like Alvin Kamara doesn't mean he's Alvin Kamara. And just because he's coming out of Clemson and has all the national spotlight from all those playoff games on primetime over the years, he's not going to be Kamara 2.0. He's smaller. I don't think he's as physical. And the Jacksonville Jaguars, they drafted him. So he's going to be reunited with Trevor Lawrence. So they actually were never broken up in the first place. They get to go from Clemson to Jacksonville together. Great for him, I guess. But I really don't think he's all that in a bag of chips. I don't think he's even a complete running back like Najee Harris, the guy selected right before him, to even be justified to be taken in the first round. So I thought this was a really interesting move. Urban Meyer said they're going to use him as a third down back. So if that's your actual plan for Travis Etienne, which is what he is, how do you justify taking him in the first round? I don't know. I really don't. I think there was a lot of other guys that they could have taken later in the draft that would have had the same impact that Travis Etienne is going to have for the Jaguars. So I thought that was a really surprising move, and I really didn't like the pick.
You mentioned how Travis is going to be reunited with Trevor Lawrence, and then we also have Ja'Marr Chase being reunited with Joe Burrow. And then we also have Jalen Hurts being reunited with Devontae Smith. Is this like do you think teams are trying to do this, reunite their quarterback?
Don't forget Tua gets Jalen Waddle now, one of his favorite targets. Yeah, so I don't know. I'm guessing quarterbacks are starting to have a little bit more say every year. Because we know how Mahomes last year, it was kind of a joke that apparently he texted Andy Reid. He said he wanted Edwards-Helaire, and Andy Reid just did it. It turns out Edwards-Helaire is still a great fit for that offense regardless. I kind of think that the Bengals were doing Joe Burrow a bit of a solid because of, he just got absolutely killed last year at a FedEx Field in Washington, D.C. And they said, okay, Joe, we're going to do you a solid. Look, we know you got really banged up last year here. We're going to make it up to you here. Who do you want here? Do you want Penei Sewell or do you want Ja'Marr Chase? He opted for his brother from LSU, so he got that. And then they ended up going offensive tackle in the later rounds. I think that was absolutely the right pick as well. I'd give that pick an A+ because I think Ja'Marr Chase is absolutely worth every penny. I don't know. Yeah, it was a very weird storyline to see, but kind of exciting. I think it's great for these quarterbacks. Teams are finally a little bit more committed, I guess, to helping out their quarterbacks after, seeing other guys not being supported, like Aaron Rodgers. So.
But yeah, Jake, you just mentioned Joe Burrow, and obviously he went out early with a torn ACL. But the Jaguars head coach, Urban Meyer, he actually mentioned last week that he thinks playing Joe Burrow in the beginning of the season without really just like easing him into the NFL level was a terrible idea and like terrible coaching mistake, and that he's not going to do that with his young quarterback. Because I mean, you could, I think I talked about this before, but like at a collegiate level, obviously it's still insanely difficult, but when you're switching to the type of high speed level that the NFL is, you got to ease these quarterbacks in. And then you have someone like Zach Wilson, who he had a pretty easy, I think
he had a Joe Burrow, yeah, tight year this year, mm-hmm. You know, made a big improvement in his game and elevated him to being the second best overall quarterback in this draft class.
Exactly. Yeah. So, I mean, I just feel like these coaches have to make sure that they're not just throwing these young quarterbacks to the wolves, or else they're going to end up. I saw this, I don't know why NFL memes on Instagram was going off, but there were so many things that were making me laugh. And there was this one who was like, RIP to Joe Burrow's other ACL. And I was like, oh no, I don't want to see that happen again. Yeah. So I think my favorite pick of this draft, honestly, or my favorite move was, even though I don't like the Chicago Bears, I think trading from spot 22 to pick 11 for Justin Fields was such a strong move on their part. Cause obviously Mitch Trubisky was not working out for them very well. And I mean, it's crazy because I actually watched Justin Fields and Trevor Lawrence when they played in the Elite 11 back when they were in high school, when I was a junior in high school. So watching them compete against each other then versus now going into the NFL, something like really cool to watch over the past like 5-6 years. But I just, Justin Fields was always my top pick of, or my favorite player to watch coming through the draft. And so I think he's going to be a really smart move for them. Matt Nagy also said that it's their job as a coach, as a team, to develop him, and they have a plan. He's really good at viewing the field, and I just think that was probably my favorite move of the draft for sure.
Yeah, Justin Fields, biggest loser of the draft, falling to the Chicago Bears. No, I'm just kidding. I'm sure he was definitely upset, you know, when the San Francisco 49ers did not pick him, because you would be inheriting, you know, a great situation. I'm sure he's a little bit salty about that. Kyle Shanahan played everybody with that smile to Justin Fields right there. Kudos to him. But yeah, I don't think Justin Fields' fall was by accident. Like, I was not super high on him. I had him as my fourth best quarterback in this draft class, and I only had him over Mac Jones because Justin Fields has the physical mold of the modern NFL quarterback, and there's just more potential there. But I think a lot of it had to do with coming down to these pre-draft interviews and teams deciding for themselves, who do they really like? Whose character did they identify with the most? And I get, for the 49ers, it was not Justin Fields. There's also just some flaws in Justin Fields' game that really kind of had me hold him in a much lower regard in comparison to Zach Wilson and Trey Lance as well. But yeah, Chicago Bears, no, this is a great draft, a great move for them. Finally getting aggressive and trying to correct their mistake of taking Trubisky years ago over, you know, Mahomes, Deshaun Watson, and others. And they're trying to right that wrong here with Justin Fields, bring some excitement into that locker room, just because it's been such a great defense and the offense hasn't been able to hold up their end of the bargain for years. And I think the defense is finally fed up with it. But now you get Justin Fields in there. Ryan Pace is trying to win back the respect of the team. And Matt Nagy finally has a quarterback that might be able to execute what he wants to do on offense now, because just Mitch Trubisky was just so terrible to watch, so conservative in his play style. And now we're finally going to get away from that. And now Justin Fields is going to, it's going to be his team. I wouldn't be surprised if he started from day one. He's obviously definitely very raw though, I think. And there's definitely going to be he has a ton of things to work on for sure before he's ready to play at a high level. But it's going to be very exciting to see what the Bears do. Cause yeah, now you have Allen Robinson. They also have Darnell Mooney, a guy I really love on the Chicago Bears. And now we're going to finally see the Chicago Bears be really competitive and a fun team to watch. Maybe they catch up with the Packers finally. I don't know. We'll see.
Can we just for a sec talk about how weird the Niners were with like them trading up to the third round? They were just like so weird. Like
they're keeping it really quiet. I heard that actually the other, like the defensive and offensive coaches didn't know who they were going to pick. So only the head coach and then the GM knew, which is mind-blowing.
It was just like weird. They were talking about maybe getting Mac. People thought maybe they were trading him to get Mac Jones, and then he like played like crap at the pro day, and then they were all weird about the whole, like it was just weird. And then someone asked like, do you think Jimmy G is going to be your quarterback? And he was like, I don't know if he'll be alive on Sunday. Like
That was easily the weirdest quote of this entire draft season was Kyle Shanahan saying, "We don't know he's going to be alive Sunday." You know,
and yeah, like, and okay, you don't have to, like, Kyle, what are you planning?
I know, like, you don't have to kill Jimmy G so he's not your quarterback. Like, chill out, man.
I know. I saw something. All the players like texted him on Sunday, or, like, not all of them, like a few of them were like, "Hey, just wanted to let you know we're like alive today."
Yeah. George Kittle definitely. I think he headlined that that group chat or that group text, whatever it was. But yeah, another successful prediction for me. I did not buy the Mac Jones hype. I knew that was way too good to be true. That there's no way that was going to happen because Mac Jones was just not an upgrade over Jimmy G. And I'm glad the 49ers agreed with me. I heard a lot of different things about this Trey Lance selection, though. I heard that they didn't honestly know until like about a week out from the draft of what this pick was going to be. So they didn't really know until after they traded up. Which I think you would think it'd be the opposite. You know, we really love this guy. Let's make sure we go up and get him. But I guess they were just happy with, you know, the top four quarterbacks that they were going to be okay with whoever fell to them, whether it was Zach Wilson, Trey Lance, or Justin Fields, whatever. And I also heard that Kyle Shanahan lobbied for Mac Jones and got voted out by the rest of the room, John Lynch and, you know, and company. So I don't know if that was true, but, you know, just a lot of interesting rumors. There was a lot of interesting rumors on draft day. Like, draft day was pretty insane, I think, this year, more specifically because of Aaron Rodgers wanting his GM out of there. This was a great draft. Absolutely lived up to the hype. A lot of great picks. I will say there's only one team that I actually gave an A-plus overall grade for this draft class, and that was the Carolina Panthers.
Why?
Some examples, yeah. Elaborate.
Yeah, if I can't elaborate on that. So first of all, so their first pick in the draft, so they have their choice of the top DBs or Devontae Smith, Micah Parsons, Rashawn Slater, also there. I thought that was going to be the pick because they really need offensive line help, and left tackle was kind of a big hole for them. They didn't go Rashawn Slater though. They actually went with a Matt Rhule based selection here. I think that Matt Rhule had a lot of input on this one. And they went with J.C. Horn, the DB out of South Carolina. This was the one defensive position that they did not address in last year's draft class. So they went out and got their guy this year. And I really love the pick, J.C. Horn. He has a lot of similar skills and characteristics of Jalen Ramsey. And I honestly do think there's a chance that he ends up being just as good as him in the near future. And I would totally support that pick over Patrick Surtain, who a lot of people thought was the consensus top corner in this draft. I think J.C. Horn just has a little bit of a higher ceiling, super physical, and I think he's a little bit more athletic, a little bit more versatile. So I really love J.C. Horn, and just a complete corner. You know, he's physical in the run game too. The dude loves to hit, not just elite in coverage. So yeah, really love that pick. And then going to the second round, this is one of my favorite picks of the draft. This might be the best value pick, I think, in the entire NFL draft, was getting Terrace Marshall at in the second round at pick, I think, 57 overall. He should have been going in the first round, I think, easily. I was really surprised that the Ravens passed on him because they really loved LSU talent. And instead they went for Rashad Bateman. But, you know, that's also a great selection for them. I'd give that pick an A as well. Terrace Marshall, 6'4", 200, you know, and he plays bigger than he is. He's got a huge catch radius, can play through contact at a really high level, not afraid of the moment, can make all the tight and contested catches. And, you know, he's still a really good route runner as well. That's probably the biggest area that he can improve, but I think he definitely will do that. He's getting reunited with former offensive coordinator at LSU, Joe Brady, back on that 2019 national title team. So that should be a very hashtag fun to watch offense in 2021 for the Carolina Panthers with Sam Darnold as well as a new quarterback there. And then I also thought they just had great day three picks of tight end Tommy Tremble out of Notre Dame. Limited tape on him, but he flashed a big skill set that team's really coveted, and he ended up going on day three, which is really surprising me. And then the running back, Chuba Hubbard, Oklahoma State, kind of fell through the draft process. He was really hyped earlier in the season when college football was just getting started, and he ends up falling more to day three because I think teams viewed him more as a third down back. But if there's a team that can definitely utilize him to the fullest, I think it could be this Carolina Panthers offense under Joe Brady. And then they also got a corner, Keith Taylor, great size. Out of Washington, he had a great Senior Bowl and really showed off his skills there. And he's got some potential as well. So I think this was just a very complete draft, the most complete draft in this draft class. And I really love the first two picks. So I give them an A+.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree with that. What I think is really funny is, I think we talked about this earlier, but I wonder what Cam Newton is thinking about Mac Jones going to the Patriots. Like, is he upset about that? Is he squirming a little bit? I don't know. Because you guys think?
I think the media is kind of doing Cam dirty just by, because they are posting about him so much that they're inadvertently making us sick of Cam. And it's not even Cam's fault. It's just, okay, the cameras are coming to him. What do you expect him to do, you know? I think that's why we're kind of sick of seeing all this Cam, you know, everybody's out to get me, I'm going to prove them wrong, hype, mindset, you know, off season. So I think everybody's kind of over it. I think it's inevitable that Mac Jones will probably surpass him because just the arm talent is not there for Cam anymore. You know, Cam spelled backwards is Mac. So literally complete opposites in that quarterback room. So yeah, interesting quarterback battle. I don't know if we're ever going to see another one like that in quite some time.
Can I just say my prediction was correct and Tim Tebow is going to make his comeback. Okay, you guys doubted me, but it's going to happen. It's coming back.
Did you actually predict that? Did you actually predict
no,
that?
No, that was a complete joke. I was genuinely kidding. And then 2 weeks later, it makes headline news, Tim Tebow. And I was like, no way. So that's my best prediction I think that I've made this season.
He's just there. I think if the Jags sign him, I think he's just going to be there to hype up the team. Oh, yeah. And kind of be that guy that gives the awesome pregame speech, and then
I was gonna say motivational speaker, yeah.
And just absolutely, you know, messes around on special teams and lights a guy up, you know, like with the awesome tackle on kickoff, you know, or something. Like, I don't think it's gonna be anything super special with Tim Tebow.
I'm there for it though. Anything else about the draft? I really thought the draft was super interesting this year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, yeah, a lot of teams. I gave a lot of A's out, but it's just that Carolina draft class. I couldn't get past it. I mean,
who was your least or your lowest rating?
Oh yeah, my lowest grade. So yeah, I was thinking about this for a little bit, and it ends up, I wouldn't say by default, they didn't really have as great of an opportunity to showcase, you know, what they were going to do with the same amount of picks as everybody else. But this team only had 3 picks, and I don't think they really made the most of them, and that is the Seattle Seahawks.
I knew you were going to say that. I was waiting for it. I think they had 4 picks, actually.
No, they had 3. They had 3. It was
Seahawks never – they always get rated bad in the draft. But you know what? They find a way.
Tell me where it paid off. Where did it pay off? So far, it has not paid off.
2012 draft, 5th-round pick. Look at their quarterback.
All right, yeah. If we're still living off 2012, then that's not exactly the greatest sign.
Richard Sherman, Doug Baldwin. Those were never first, second round draft picks.
All right, well, it doesn't look like that Jamal Adams trade is going to be paying off the way they hope. That's all I'm going to say. And their top selection, wide receiver Dwayne Eskridge out of Western Michigan, they're trying to dip into that Maction pool of players. I don't know if that pick is going to be all that in a bag of chips. If I'm being completely honest.
You know what? We'll have this conversation once we get closer to the playoffs, okay?
Anyways, I'm going to grade that. I'm going to grade there's 3 selections. Like, they have some interesting picks. Like, Trey Brown at Oklahoma could be a very quality starter on that team. And also, they got Stone Forsythe, a little bit of a late riser out of Florida.
That's their offensive tackle.
I guess that's their left tackle of the future. We'll see. But yeah, I didn't really love the selections all around, and I'm gonna give that draft class a C-.
All right.
It's not a D though.
Let's talk later in the season.
There just wasn't a lot of bad drafts, in my opinion, to be giving bad grades. Like last year, I gave the Packers an F because their first 3 rounds they drafted all backups. So yeah, that was just what it was what it was. So, and I think everybody would probably still agree with that rating after last season. So, yeah, there just wasn't a ton of bad drafts. Like, even Detroit, I thought, had a really good draft class, even though they passed on Justin Fields, because I can understand why. I think they're trying to be tankable in 2022 and go get one of the top quarterback prospects there, because there's going to be a deep pool of quarterbacks to choose from. It looks like it's being headlined right now by Spencer Rattler out of Oklahoma, who is quickly becoming a quarterback factory. But yeah, there's going to be a lot of other guys that could surpass Spencer Rattler. So yeah, that'll be fun next year watching what quarterbacks rise.
I just want to talk about the amazing Steph Curry.
That's what I wanted to hear too. Nicole, take it away.
What? He broke his hand. Best shooter of all time broke his hand. Then comes back and has maybe a better season than his MVP season.
4 years later, people were saying, oh, he's out of his prime. Nuh-uh. You can look up Steph Curry's name on Twitter, and you can just, like, all these amazing stats and records that he's broke. It's amazing to watch him. It's like the ball magically floats out of his hand into the hoop every time he shoots. It's just like, and one thing I wonder, I'm like, okay, he grew up with a dad in the NBA. Do you think maybe a lot of it was like the training he went through? Do you think maybe he has like natural athleticism? Is he just like the hardest worker out there? I mean, I hear stories about how, you know, he's like trains and insanely and all this stuff. But it seems like every player in the NBA would. So, like, why does this make him, like, an amazing shooter and the rest of them are? It's just, it's freaking insane. You know, every season there's something new with Steph, and he continues to amaze me, and I'm sure a lot of other people. And also, he's just a class act. He's humble. He's great. Very impressed.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy because, like, yeah, they kind of been in cruise control the last 2 years, you know, with the departure of KD. And they haven't quite had the roster to be in contention for the NBA Finals and making it back there. So there just hasn't been a ton of pressure on Steph and the rest of that Warriors team, nor any reason to pay a ton of attention to them just because they haven't been one of the top teams now for the last 2 years. And yeah, he's still got the Warriors despite everything he's doing. I mean, he's got a career high in points per game, 31.5, just because he's been shooting the lights out of the ball. And the Warriors are still only 33-33, exactly at 500. I believe at the 9 seed right now in the Western Conference. So yeah, it's tough for him. I mean, I would love to give him the MVP. I just don't think that's the NBA. That's not how the NBA quite values that award. They kind of prioritize winning a little bit more over just pure stats. And I think I would love to see Chris Paul. Chris Paul is another guy. Doesn't have the stats, but the Suns, oh my gosh, what a dramatic turnaround that franchise has undergone with him. They had a complete culture change. I mean, they brought in him and Jay Crowder, and then all that young talent from last year. They brought that momentum very clearly from last season at the bubble into 2021, and it's paid off bringing in Chris Paul. And he's had that effect everywhere he's gone. I'd love to see him get it, you know, at his age, you know, like 36 or 35 season, however old he is. Maybe that was a little too old. I think he might be 34. But no, he's still doing great things, you know, despite the age. And I love what he's done for the Suns. I would love to see him get the MVP. But yeah, I don't know if the stats are there.
I just found a stat that says, fun fact, in the 2016 season, which was one of Stephen Curry's MVP seasons, a 28-year-old Steph Curry had 40 games with 30 or more points. Warriors were 37-3 in these games. Keep in mind, they had, like, this was, like, you know, the amazing season where they won and all that. And the 2021 season, a 33-year-old Steph Curry has 34 games with 30 or more points. The Warriors are 22-12 in these games. Like, I just don't understand how he does it. Maybe it has the fact to do with Klay's hurt, and so, you know, he's, like, shooting more. Maybe, I don't know, but.
I think he was kind of sick of being spoiled for all those years with KD and Klay and Draymond still in his prime on all those finals runs, that now he's actually embracing this new challenge of actually playing with a subpar team and trying to get them to the playoffs. And I think that's why you're seeing a reinvigorated Steph Curry here, because I think he's mentally applied himself in a different way this season compared to years past.
Yeah, good for him. That's so fun to watch.
good for him. You know, he actually has to carry the team now after all those years. Yeah.
Yeah. And he's able to just show off every game.
And they might not make the playoffs still, you know.
You just go through and watch his highlights and you can just be amazed. Like, I'm watching them right now. It's just, how does he do that?
Oh, yeah. I was just going to say, I saw something last week, and it was on ESPN. They were discussing the kind of like the definition of the MVP award and everything. And like Jake just mentioned, is the NBA kind of values the MVP award going to the top four teams, or the teams that are doing really well in the season. But obviously, I feel like a lot of us would agree that Curry deserves this award. And so it's kind of frustrating in that way that, like, even though his team is not going to make it very far in the playoffs, if they make the playoffs, like, he's not going to be in contention for that award. So I bet he's frustrated. I know he thinks he deserves it and everything. And it's just very interesting how that's divvied up differently, you know, how they value, like, the team more than just the individual player and stats.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's, I mean, yeah, it's a weird year for MVP because we have a lot of weird candidates there. There's all like a kind of a but qualification to every single candidate. Like LeBron, you could say, yeah, great stats. He's been up great stats in his age 36 season, but he's missed so many games. He's probably out of contention. And the Lakers record isn't quite there anyways. You know, so it's just like the winning formula isn't also there as well, that winning ingredient. And then Giannis, you know, Bucks are doing well. But he's already won it 2 years in a row. And this year hasn't exactly been an improvement from last season from a team standpoint or from an individual standpoint. So I doubt that he's going to win again. And then Joel Embiid from the Sixers, you know, it's you could say that he's made a strong case, but he has also missed a lot of games. I mean, they've won a lot. Yeah, you just missed a lot of games. And I think that is a major thing that they take into consideration with this award. And then you have Steph leading the Warriors because he's gone on a crazy stretch where he's just averaging like over, you know, he's averaging like over under 35 points a game in the second half of the season here. But they're still only at 500. So how do you, where do you evaluate that? And what do you do with him there? And then you have Jokic trying to lead the Nuggets without Jamal Murray now. And it might go to him. Just because, you know, like they have a little bit better of a formula with winning and his production this season. So, yeah, I don't know. It's going to be interesting to see what they do with that award.
This is another thing I wanted to bring up with the NBA. What exactly do you guys think about the play-in tournament? And why is LeBron so mad about it?
Well, I think it's because the Lakers, I think the play-in tournament, they expanded it or something to I think like 5 through 9 or 5 through 10 or something, like the 5 through 10 seeded teams get to play out for those final spots in the playoffs or something like that. I mean, correct me if I'm wrong. And basically because he is now part of that play-in tournament, he is not a fan of it anymore. So that is why he's kind of been dubbed like the clown of the week for that. So yeah, not the greatest look for LeBron there. People were very quick to clap back on that.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. It's a smart marketing move. More games, more money.
I mean, if the Lakers were to lose in the play-in round, I think whoever, expanded that, play-in tournament is going to be getting a lot of criticism and may or may not be out of a job. So
if the Lakers are legit and one of the best teams in the league, then they shouldn't lose.
No, exactly. Yeah. No, that's the argument though. It's like, yeah, let's just take care of business. If you're really that good, you know, like shouldn't be a sweat. So I think that's how the Lakers should be looking at it. It's not great for a guy that's finally experiencing injuries in his age 36 season, who's been able to be so durable for so long. Now he's going to have to play a play-in tournament on top of his injury this season and just not being able to have as many games with a little bit of a reloaded Laker team. But you know what? It's still going to be an interesting playoff nonetheless. I would say, you know, like a legitimate plan should be like 7 through 10. I don't think it needs to be a super drastic expanded play-in tournament with just the bottom half of the seeds in each conference, like 5 through 10 or something. That just seems like a lot of excessive games and a lot of meaningless games, kind of like bowl games in college football. So yeah, I don't know. I kind of have mixed feelings about it.
For those of you listening that are a little unsure of what the play-in tournament is, I'll read this. Before the implementation of the play-in tournament, the top 8 seeds in each conference would make the playoffs when the regular season ended. That's not the case anymore. Now only the top 6 seeds in each conference are guaranteed a trip to the postseason. The teams that finish 7th and 8th will join the teams that finish 9th and 10th in a 4-team play-in tournament to determine the final 2 playoff spots. I think it makes it kind of interesting.
Yeah, no, definitely. I mean, a little bit, yeah. I don't know. So how long are those, like, the series, though? Or is it just one game? Is it just one game?
So the reason, like, people are mad about it is because they're like, you could, you know, be one of, you know, have that 8th spot and then have a better record than all these other teams the rest of the season and then lose 2 games and be out of the postseason.
Oh. Yeah, no, I kind of like it. Yeah, I think that's interesting. But yeah, it does. Like, it kind of sucks. Like, if there's a key injury, some guy's not able to come back on the court, finish out the game, could change the impact of the game, and maybe the better team doesn't win. But yeah, overall, I think, yeah, it's just another way for the NBA to make money, kind of make up for that COVID year. And yeah, it just make for a little bit more of an exciting playoff.
Mm-hmm. I believe it was like inspired by the COVID year too, because they had some similar format. when they had to move into the bubble after the hiatus they took due to the pandemic.
Yeah, it's crazy how they're changing the structure of like the season. Like, I mean, NFL adding in an extra week too, and then the NBA changing it too after like so many years of it being the same. So I think that's interesting. I like that.
I like it. It keeps it fresh.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, how about that NFL number change rule where the numbers, the jersey restrictions on numbers for position players has now changed. I thought that was a great approval by the NFL to do that. So now we're going to have guys wearing single digits. I mean, because it used to be just kickers and punters. We don't need all these kickers and punters only getting access to all the cool numbers, you know. So, yeah, now we're finally going to get some actual. It's kind of a big deal. Everybody wants to see Odell wearing number 3, okay? We're going to have to wait a year on that, actually, because he probably doesn't want to buy the massive inventory of jerseys that they already have printed out of his number 13. I'm sure his price tag to buy out his inventory is like $5 million or something absurd. Because Dalvin Cook's is 1.5, and he decided to bypass that for this season, and he'll change his number, I'm guessing, in 2022 to number 4, his college number. So, but yeah, we're going to see Ja'Marr Chase rocking number 1 for the Bengals. We're going to see Devontae Smith wearing number 6 for the Eagles this year, which is cool. And we're going to see Emmanuel Sanders, who's a free agent. He signed with the Buffalo Bills, I believe, and he's going to wear number 1 this season. So yeah, we're going to see a lot of cool position players wearing all those great numbers. I mean, it was about jersey sales. What drives every decision in sports is money. And that's why the NFL made this rule. But no, I think it's great. It's great for the fans. It's great for us. I think it is.
All I know is I might have to get a new Green Bay jersey soon, because right now I got that number 12. So
I can tell you what to change. The type of player in sports, he would like fight over the number he like one of his teammates. He's like, no, I want to be number 10.
That's all we have for this episode of the Huddle Up Podcast. Thank you again, you guys, for listening. You can follow me on social media on Twitter at mtownsley with 2 Ys, and the same for Instagram. And again, as always, please find me on LinkedIn.
You can follow me on Instagram, Twitter, LinkedIn as well, YouTube at Nick Time for Sports. Well, my LinkedIn is just my name, but yeah.
Yeah, go ahead, give me a follow as well on Instagram, Twitter, whatever you want, at JakeBurton419. Don't follow me on LinkedIn. Don't even look for me there. Unless you're a prospective employer, then by all means, reach out. So yeah, that being said, yeah, adios.